Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Last night, Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders addressed his supporters in a live streaming event. In his speech, Sanders said his campaign this year is just the start of transforming the American political system.
Election days come and go, but political and social revolutions that attempt to transform our society never end. And that's what this campaign has been about over the past year. That's what the political revolution is about, and that's why the political revolution must continue into the future.
Will Sanders be able to carry on the political revolution that he started a year ago when he launched his campaign? Can he be successful in changing the policies of the Democratic Party? And when will he enthusiastically support the presumed Democratic presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton? These are a few of the questions we have for our guest today, two people who have been following this presidential race very closely. Matt Dickinson, who's a political science professor at Middlebury College, and NPR campaign reporter Sam Sanders, who's also the co-host of the NPR Politics podcast. Great to have you both on the program today.
Great to be with you.
Thank you.
You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition by giving us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. What do you think of Bernie Sanders' plan to try to transform the Democratic Party? Instead of setting up an independent political organization at this time, he wants to take over the Democratic Party and have it reflect a progressive agenda for working families. What do you think of this approach? Sanders did not endorse Hillary Clinton last night, but said he looked forward to working with her to adopt a progressive agenda at the Democratic National Convention in July. Has the time come for him to endorse Hillary Clinton, or perhaps not? Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Well, some people thought Bernie Sanders last night was going to call for the creation of an independent organization to further the goals of his political revolution, much in the same way that former Governor Howard Dean did in 2004, when after an unsuccessful run for president, he created Democracy for America. But Sanders didn't do that. Instead, he talked about transforming and taking over the Democratic Party.
Most importantly, the Democratic Party needs leadership which is prepared to open its doors and welcome into its ranks working people and young people. That is the energy we need to transform the Democratic Party, take on the special interests, and transform our country.
Matt, what do you think of Sanders' approach?
Well, it makes a certain amount of sense in that he's got an existing vehicle. Rather than creating your own vehicle, why not commandeer this existing vehicle and use that to further your own interests? The difficulty, of course, is it exposes a tension. He wants to transform a party, and to transform a party, you basically have to cast some doubt on the credibility of the existing establishment. And, of course, that undercuts the efforts of that establishment candidate to win the presidency. So he's really trying to walk a very delicate walk here.
And, Matt, have we seen efforts in the past to fight for, quote, the heart and soul of the Democratic Party, and have those efforts been successful?
There's always a reform element in the Democratic Party. We've seen this in previous election cycles. You cited Howard Dean, but you can go back before that. And there's always an issue about to what degree do we try to create a revolution by staying within the party, or do we go outside the party and try to establish our own movement, like Ross Perot, for instance, with the reform movement after 1992. So this is an ongoing struggle for the soul of a party, but it's not the first time we've seen this struggle, and it won't be the last.
Sam, this year marks the first time that Bernie Sanders has run as a Democrat. I was struck last night by the number of times he said "we" when referring to himself and the Democratic Party. What kind of challenges does Sanders face in his call to transform the Democratic Party?
I think he faces a lot. I think that he's a newcomer to the party, and someone like Hillary Clinton, she's been there for decades, and she has lots of support there. I also think that the coalition that Sanders has built up these last few months, it's not sure where they go next. Do they stay involved? Do they continue to want Sanders to be the figurehead. There's lots of questions. I do think, though, that the smartest thing for him to do is try to work within the party because, you know, after every cycle, someone that loses has some new group to keep change going. And those groups kind of are there for a while, then they fizzle. There's no need for more groups. You know, there's a need to have the right people be in the groups that can get things done. And it seems the party is the best vehicle for that, for his activists.
Sam, are some Democratic officials going to say to Sanders, hey, wait a minute, who are you to try to change our party?
I'm sure they've been saying that, but you know what? He's there. He won over 10 million votes. He's got a big movement behind him, and they're going to go to that convention. So I think that we will see the party establishment give him some visible concessions.
And Sam, this week you wrote an article and you found that a number of Sanders supporters have nothing but contempt for the Democratic establishment and for Hillary Clinton, for that matter. So do you think many of his supporters really have an interest in trying to transform the Democratic Party?
I mean, I think that there are Sanders supporters on both sides. I've talked to folks who said this race is now over, we're going to rally behind Clinton. But I've also talked to lots of folks that see the entire process is rigged and they would never support Clinton. And they think that the entire party, the entire caucus and primary system is fraudulent, right? And so I think the question is, what does Sanders and Clinton have to do together to get those folks to be Democrats come November? I don't think we'll hear a ringing endorsement from Sanders for Clinton, but the question is, what else can he and she do to change their minds and to change how they feel about the system? It might just be enough to talk about Trump for the next 5 months.
So you don't think there's going to be a ringing endorsement by Sanders of Hillary
Clinton? I don't think
it'll
be ringing. Yeah.
No?
I don't actually think they like each other. And I think that we've had a lot of evidence of that throughout the contest. And I also think that the way that Sanders has spoken about Clinton, he has some fundamental questions about her political character. I might be surprised, but I could very easily see at the convention Sanders saying to him and his supporters to get in line, but never saying something as strong and as stirring and as ringing as the endorsement that Clinton gave Obama 8 years ago.
Matt, what do you think? Do you think we're going to see Bernie Sanders enthusiastically supporting Hillary Clinton, or will it be something a little less?
No, it'll be something a little less. Again, the difference between 2016 and 2008 is that there was not a perception of a huge ideological difference between Obama and Clinton. So whoever got the nomination, the party was going to go in the same direction. Sanders has fundamentally challenged the basis of Clinton's candidacy, and he's making the argument that she's not right for the party. So he can't very well then switch on a dime and turn around and say, but let's endorse her. The other issue here is, you know, roughly 30% of Sanders supporters, according to polls, say they'll never vote for Clinton. Now, I suspect a good chunk of them will hold their nose and choose Clinton over the specter of Donald Trump. But there is a minority, maybe 10% of those Sanders supporters who are fundamentally anti-establishment. And the real worry here is if they decide Trump is the lesser of two evils here.
Well, last night, Bernie Sanders did not endorse Hillary Clinton. Instead, he said he wants to be certain that she fully supports many of the progressive issues that he's raised in his campaign. This is how he put it.
I look forward in the coming weeks to continued discussion between the two campaigns to make certain that your voices are heard and that the Democratic Party passes the most progressive platform in its history and that Democrats actually fight for that agenda.
So Sanders says he can't wave a magic wand and have his supporters instantly embrace the campaign of Hillary Clinton. She has to earn the support of people who are backing him. Matt, is he asking a lot of Hillary Clinton to come to his supporters and say, here's the progressive agenda I'm willing to support?
He is. At some point, Hillary Clinton has to tell him, I understand that you have passionate supporters and they believe strongly in your message. But frankly, we went head to head and my message won. It won by almost 4 million more votes. It won within the Democratic Party establishment in terms of superdelegates, and it won in pledged delegates. So I can't concede my mantle of leadership just to bring your supporters to my side.
And how hard can Bernie Sanders push this strategy before the Clinton campaign says, hey, enough is enough?
Well, ultimately, it comes down to the golden rule. Those who have the gold makes the rules. And in this case, the gold are delegates, and she has more of them. So if push comes to shove, eventually all these things, platforms, rules, get voted on at the convention, and she's going to win that. At a certain point, that reality becomes paramount, and it drives everything else.
And Sam, I'm wondering, are some Democratic officials going to say, this is exactly what we don't need in the next 4 or 5 weeks? We don't need negotiations between Sanders and Clinton campaigns to determine if Bernie Sanders is going to endorse Hillary Clinton. Are they going to put pressure on Sanders to, at some point here, lighten up a little bit?
I mean, I'm sure they've already been putting pressure on him. But I don't think he cares about that pressure. He has been saying for a long time he's going to go to the convention. So I was not surprised to hear him not drop out last night. I also think that he's very different from the place that Clinton was in 08. She wanted to run again. So she needed to be a team player and show that she could be part of the party to run again later. It's not really clear that Sanders wants to run again for president. He's 74 years old. He has a safe seat here in the Senate. This could be his last stand. And if it's his last stand and he has nothing left to lose, why would you drop out until you have to? Like, I am not surprised by what he's doing. And I think for him, tactically, it's pretty smart. I think he loses all the leverage he has as soon as he leaves the race officially.
And so do you think, Sam, that what he's really fighting for is a progressive agenda at the party platform? And if it is, does anybody pay attention to these party platforms anyway?
Yeah, no one. The platforms don't really matter. I think what does matter and that he's also going to fight for are changes to the rules that govern party caucuses and primaries and superdelegates. And I think you could see the party perhaps make some concessions on the supers. That would be a very nice visible show to Sanders and his supporters. It might be harder to change some of the state-by-state contest, but I think he really wants some changes to the rules to make things more open.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Liza, who is calling from Marshfield. Hi, Liza. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. I have been a volunteer for Bernie's campaign from back in December, and I am really excited he's taking this to the convention because I think he does have leverage. As you just mentioned, I don't put much faith in changes to the party platform that has significant impact, but I would really be encouraging all the delegates at the convention for either side to vote to do away with superdelegates. It's been such a hobble for the Bernie campaign from the beginning that they can just say before the even vote is first vote is cast that she was ahead by 400 delegates. And then at the very end, they also framed before California and those other final states voted. Those superdelegates really had an impact on being able to call the race before that final contest. So I think that would be a really concrete concession that could help me get on board with the Democratic Party going forward to November.
Okay, Liza, many thanks for your phone call. Sam, how likely is it, do you think, that Democratic officials will say, okay, we don't need the superdelegates anymore?
I mean, you might not see something where they get rid of all of them, but they could lower the number, they could change the rules that govern them, they could do lots of things to give kind of a visible concession. But I think it's also important to note that, at least in this contest, Sanders would have lost even without the supers. And there aren't really previous contests where the supers have not obeyed the will of the folks that have voted. But symbolically, it means a lot to lots of Bernie supporters. And it's a symbol of the establishment, and it's a symbol of non-democracy. So if the party can make movement on that, it could go a long, long way, perhaps much further than platform changes.
But and Matt, Bernie Sanders is talking about changes in the primary system. He wants a more open primary in all these states where Democrats and independents can vote. But as Sam mentioned, isn't that a state-by-state decision?
It is in large part. State parties in conjunction with state governments set the rules governing the nominating process. There is obviously some input from the national party in terms of whether they're going to accept those rules. And so there's a lot of compromise and negotiation. But it's not simply the case that you can go to the Democratic National Convention and changed the entire nominating system on the basis of some rule changes there. The other quick point I would make is we've seen these efforts to change the rules before. After 1968, where there were riots at the Democratic Convention, the Democrats appointed a committee, the McGovern-Fraser Committee. It came back and it issued a set of rules designed to clarify how delegates were selected to make the process more orderly, more open. But the unintended consequence of that was we really instituted this period of primaries. And so there's always this risk when you change rules that there's unintended consequences that nobody really anticipates. So if you're a part of the Democratic Party establishment, you want to be very cautious here about just jumping ahead on the Sanders bandwagon of reform without fully thinking about the consequences. So if we lose superdelegates, for instance, what provides the party ballast to govern or to make sure the party process protects the party itself? This is one of the things the party leaders have to consider.
And Sam, I'm wondering, you were talking about Bernie Sanders doesn't have a lot invested necessarily in the future of the Democratic Party, but doesn't he want to have a role if the Democrats take over the Senate in November? He's in line to become the chairman of the Budget Committee. So at some point, doesn't he have to sort of go along with the Democratic Party, or is that not the case?
I mean, I think a really good predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And he's been someone who is not afraid to stand on his own in the Senate on the issues that matter to him. This week, you'll notice that he was not on the floor for that quasi-filibuster on gun control. He has not, you know, been a member of the party before. That could happen now. But there's precedent to suggest that he can continue to be a maverick of sorts on the floor.
And also, Sam, you've written about the way that Bernie Sanders has raised money in this campaign. He got contributions from more than 2.5 million people, an average contribution of roughly $27. Do you see Sanders using this fundraising machine to help Hillary Clinton? Will he reach out to his supporters and ask them to financially back Clinton?
I'm sure Clinton wants the list. You know, I'm sure she wants the list of all Sanders' email addresses and phone numbers to try to get to those folks. I don't know what the state of that is, but that perhaps could be even more important than a ringing endorsement, right? We don't know what's going to happen there yet, but I know that Sanders can continue to ask for what he wants the more that he holds on to things like that and the more that he withholds his full support for her. So, I mean, like I said earlier, it makes no sense for him to leave if he still wants things. And if that's one of the things that he can bargain with, it would make perfect sense to continue to the convention to try to get those things that you want on platform and delegates and process.
And Sam, what does it say about his commitment to Hillary Clinton if he doesn't make this fundraising information available?
I mean, throughout this entire race, I have not particularly thought too much of their relationship. From all that I've seen, there is not a lot of goodwill between the two of them from either side. So even if they work together to defeat Trump, as they're saying this fall, they don't have to be friends to do it. I think that there are lots of folks that work together in politics who don't like each other. And we shouldn't read too much into that. We shouldn't be mad at either of them for not being the best of friends. That's life. You know, they can find a way to unite their party without being exactly arm in arm and two-stepping together.
And Sam, in your article this week, you described Bernie Sanders as, quote, a party crasher. And you wrote that sometimes this approach worked for him, but sometimes it did not. What are some examples of where it worked and perhaps some examples of where it didn't?
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw it throughout the campaign. I think there were these moments where his message on inequality and the 1% and this thing that clearly tapped into the strength of the Occupy Wall Street movement, it spoke so clearly to people. And the thinking was for a while that that could be the message that took him all the way to the White House. But there were these other moments where he needed to pivot to other issues, and he didn't do it too well. There was this one day I was following him. He was doing a press conference in Baltimore. He had toured the neighborhood of Freddie Gray in Baltimore. This is the man who was killed in police custody last year. And at the press conference, before he came out to speak, this was like a week after the Paris attacks. So ISIS was just in the news. One of his staffers told the press there, please stay on message today. don't ask Bernie about ISIS. Stay on message. We're here to talk about Baltimore. And everyone was just like, what do you mean? Like, you have to talk about more than one thing at once. You have to be able to pivot. So, of course, all the press asked him about ISIS, and he got mad about it, right? And that was one of those moments where you saw that he perhaps wasn't able to be as well-rounded on message as you would want him to. There was another moment where he had an event in Seattle, and two Black Lives Matter protesters stormed the stage, interrupted him. He gave up the mic and ended the event early. And this was a lingering problem he had throughout the entire campaign. He could never appeal to a majority of Black and brown voters. He won Black and brown voters under 35, but he never got a majority of them. He lost states like South Carolina by 70%. And you cannot win the Democratic primary process without winning Black voters. And he just could never, ever do that. And he tried, but he just couldn't do it.
Why do you think he failed in that respect?
You know, I talked to one of his former chiefs of staff, professor at the University of Vermont. I'm forgetting his name right now. I will find it. But he said, as long as I've known Bernie, he has been a checkmark progressive on all the issues. He's right on gay marriage. He's right on civil rights. He's right on a woman's right to choose. He's right on this and that and that. But his number one issue has always been the economy and economic justice. And even though he was right on those other things, he cared about those other things much, much less than economic justice. And I think you saw that. And I think voters felt that. And I think a lot of people felt like he didn't care enough about all of the things, if that makes sense. And that hurt him.
And yet he was very successful with younger voters.
So successful. I mean, I talked to Sanders supporters last night for a piece that aired this morning. And I talked to a 16-year-old Sanders supporter who had volunteered for Sanders for months. And he said, yeah, I know I can't vote now, but I'm going to vote the next election because of Bernie and the next one because of Bernie. And all of my friends are talking about politics in a way that they had not before because of Bernie. I think that we have yet to see the real legacy of his so-called movement. I think that the messaging that he had, the issues he spoke about, will continue to affect races and voters for years to come.
Today in the program, we're looking at some of the things Bernie Sanders said last night in his live streaming address. He wants to transform and take over the Democratic Party. What are your thoughts about this? 1-800-639-2211. We have to say goodbye to NPR's Sam Sanders at this time because he has a previous commitment. Sam, many, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks so much. It was fun.
And we're going to continue our discussion with Matt Dickinson. Again, what are your thoughts about Bernie Sanders' decision to try to take over the Democratic Party? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today in the program, we're looking at the things that Bernie Sanders talked about in his live stream address last night when he said he wants to transform the Democratic Party, essentially take it over and have a progressive agenda at the Democratic National Convention in July. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. With us in the program still, Matt Dickinson, a political science professor at Middlebury College. Matt, while Sanders didn't endorse Hillary Clinton last night, he did say it's critical that the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, businessman Donald Trump, not be elected in the fall. Here's Bernie Sanders from last night's live stream address.
After centuries of racism, sexism, and discrimination of all forms in our country, we do not need a major party candidate who makes bigotry the cornerstone of his campaign. The major political task that together we face in the next 5 months is to make certain that Donald Trump is defeated and defeated badly. And I personally intend to begin my role in that process in a very short period of time.
So, Matt, how does Sanders actively oppose the candidacy of Donald Trump while withholding his endorsement for Hillary Clinton?
That's a great question. And he didn't really give us any clues on how he's going to resolve that tension. You know, there are a number of ways in which you could envision him helping Clinton, doing everything from turning over his donor list to appearing with her at joint appearances to going to those states where he did particularly well and rallying the troops. But he said none of that. He just – and that makes me my sense is it's still part of the negotiation, and I think Sam was quite correct in saying that Sanders is not giving away any leverage before he has to. And part of that leverage is if you want me to work with you, you've got to make some concessions before I'm going to be willing to do that.
And is one of those concessions a primetime speaking slot at the Democratic convention?
Almost certainly. We know from past conventions that those speaking slots, for better or for worse, can make or break a candidate's reputation. And they provide a platform, a highly visible platform that's almost unmatched, short of being the actual party nominee. So that's part of what he wants. I think he's made clear he wants changes in the party establishment. He's already campaigning on behalf of Debbie Wasserman Schultz's opponent in the Democratic primary. So there's a number of things that he wants, but certainly a prime speaking spot is one of them.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Richard in Haverhill, Mass. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
No, thanks, Bob. I wonder, in hindsight, would it have been better for Bernie to run as an independent? As it turned out, his issue was caught on with so millions of people and young people. And the Hillary and Trump, the negatives are so high. So, I mean, three people and him running as an independent, there's a good chance he maybe could have won that way.
Matt, what do you think? What would have happened if Bernie Sanders had run as an independent?
It's just so hard in the United States because of the way our elections are structured for a third party to do well. You know, we've had some highly visible third party efforts. It's a mixed record, but the bottom line is none of them were really very successful in doing the most important thing, which was challenging for the presidency. I think he made a wise choice. Hindsight, of course, is 20/20. But there's an existing vehicle out there, this party apparatus, and I think he decided he probably was going to gain more leverage by working within the party apparatus and trying to turn it to his use than trying to create one on the outside. And I think ultimately that was the wise choice.
Matt, we got this email from Tom in Burlington. Does the media have an impact on how elections go or not? Did the media continuously stating and restating from the beginning that Hillary was in the lead by thousands of delegates make a difference to the results? Bernie supporters know the answers to these questions, so why would they accept that Hillary won fair and square?
Well, this is a perennial issue for people who lose an election. And Sanders and his supporters have talked repeatedly about the corporate media and how the game is rigged. And the notion that the media was part of this establishment that against Sanders, I think, is one that I think most Sanders supporters believe. The evidence, however, is mixed on this. The best evidence we have is that the media can focus your attention on a certain candidate through the amount of media coverage, but they don't really persuade people to vote for or against that candidate. And it's, you know, the alternative is for what? For the media not to report that the superdelegates have come out publicly in favor of Hillary Clinton? The numbers were what the numbers were, and the media, to a certain extent, has to maintain some independence and integrity and report those numbers.
And Matt, last night, Bernie Sanders said when he launched the campaign, all the media said, oh, Bernie Sanders, he's a fringe candidate. At some point, the media started to take him seriously. When was that?
Well, the first indications were the size of his rallies. I went to one in Lebanon, in New Hampshire, and it was amazing to see not only the number of people there, but the enthusiasm. It was unlike any other rally I went to. I've gone to most of the candidate rallies, and Sanders are unique. The only ones that really come close in terms of size and enthusiasm are Trump's, ironically. So that was the first indication. And then, of course, when he did well in Iowa, but then winning in New Hampshire and the way he won across all age groups, all demographics. That, I think, really cemented the idea that he was a legitimate candidate, not a flash in the pan, and that we had a horse race. And the other thing I would say to your earlier caller, you know, the media is, for all intents and purposes, would prefer to have a horse race as opposed to not a horse race. So it was in their interest to sort of have Sanders puffed up as a candidate. So I'm, you know, I'm pushing back a little bit against the idea that the media was in Hillary Clinton's hip pocket. If anything, I think they wanted to see a competitive race go on for as long as they could.
Let's turn and talk to Nessa, who's calling from Reigate Hill. Hi, Nessa. Welcome to the program.
Hi. My question is, how is Bernie going to walk this fine line between insisting that Donald Trump be defeated, yet not endorsing Hillary Clinton to overcome his followers' enthusiasm and anti-feelings toward Hillary?
Well, Matt, that is that fine line that you said Bernie Sanders has to walk.
It is indeed. This is the crucial question. At a certain point, he is a savvy politician. If he truly believes that the worst outcome in this election is a Trump victory, at some point he must come out and make it clear to his supporters that however much it pains them, the revolution has to be put on hold in order to defeat the immediate objective, which is Donald Trump. Now, how he is going to do that and when he is going to do that is an open question. I suspect sometime during the convention or shortly after, Sanders will make it clear to his followers that for now we're a unified party behind our nominee, Hillary Clinton.
And do you think he'll emerge as sort of a strong Trump critic the way we've seen Senator Elizabeth Warren in the last few weeks? And do you think he'll be doing this independently of the Clinton campaign?
I think he will be a very strong critic, in part because it's in his self-interest to remain in the media spotlight. And the way you do that is to take on the other party's nominee. So how well he synchronizes that – I mean, Bernie – is a prickly personality, and he's something of a lone wolf. He doesn't work well with others, or at least hasn't in the Senate. So I'm not going to bet the family ranch that this guy is going to be in harmony with Hillary Clinton on questions of strategy. But, you know, the first principle here is do no harm, and I think that's the highest expectation you can have if you're Hillary Clinton.
Let's talk to Samaya, who is calling from Barrie. Welcome to the program.
Hi, yeah, this is Xenia. The reason Hillary should welcome Bernie and his followers is simply because so many of them are young and he's bringing people into the party and they're the future of the party. So if Hillary and the establishment Democrats are smart, they're going to welcome him and continue to welcome the people that he's attracted.
Matt Dickinson, what's the risk here for Hillary Clinton? Does she need a good chunk of Bernie supporters if she wants to be successful in November?
She does. Here's the conundrum. We know that the younger voter is the least likely to turn out. It's not for reasons of apathy so much as it's they haven't developed voting habits. They don't know how to navigate the system and overcome things like registration and so on. And it's quite clear that Hillary does not do as well among younger voters as Bernie does. So there's an incentive here for Bernie to get those voters to the polls. But here's the problem. He has campaigned on this notion that he is outside the establishment. The establishment is corrupt. Its candidates are corrupt. And now he wants to turn around and say, I realize I'm asking you to support this corrupt establishment, but you need to do it in November. And the issue here is the appeal for Bernie to young voters is his authenticity, his purity. He's not a normal politician. And it becomes an issue when you ask your supporters to participate in quote-unquote normal politics, backing the establishment candidate. That's the real issue here. It's not clear to me that Bernie by himself is going to be able to channel all this passion among his supporters on behalf of Hillary Clinton. I think some people just won't go there.
Today in the program, we're looking at some of the issues that presidential candidate Bernie Sanders raised last night in his live streaming event. Your thoughts about his ideas to transform the Democratic Party? 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at some of the issues raised last night by Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. Our guest today, Matt Dickinson, political science professor at Middlebury College. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Well, last night, Bernie Sanders said that in order for the political revolution to be successful, many of his supporters need to run for political office, school board, city councils, members of the state legislature, and for Congress. Here's how he put it.
Now we need many of them to start running for school boards, city councils, county commissions, state legislatures, and governorships. State and local governments make enormously important decisions, and we cannot allow right-wing Republicans to increasingly control them.
Matt, this gets back to the dilemma I think you were talking about just before the break. If his supporters decide to get involved in the political process, will they want to run within the Democratic Party?
This is a wonderful question. One of my students who helped co-found College Students for Bernie at the Middlebury campus came to me recently and said, in thinking about the next step in the revolution, they wanted to organize at the grassroots. And they had been contacted by some Democratic socialists who said, listen, we would like to integrate your voter list, your supporters, into our existing organizations because we have an existing party apparatus. It's a small one, obviously. And her question to me was, is that the way to go for Bernie supporters or should we work within the Democratic Party? These are all details that I think the party supporters, the Sanders supporters, are not in agreement on. And they're sort of working this out on a day-by-day, case-by-case basis. And it'll be fascinating to see how and if this revolution continues after November.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Tom, who's calling from Reigate. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
One, I voted for Bernie for Senate, but I voted for Hillary in the primary because I can't point to anything that Bernie's really accomplished in the Senate over the last 14 years. And two, is Bernie getting paid his Senate salary while he runs for president? He hasn't made a single Senate vote going back to at least February. He's missed every vote in the Senate since at least February 29th. So are we paying him to campaign or what?
Matt, he still is drawing his Senate salary, isn't he?
He is indeed. And the caller is quite right. He's been AWOL from the Senate business for quite a while now. Turns out running for presidency is a full-time job. I suspect many Sanders supporters in Vermont are going to forgive him this lapse. And the assumption being, of course, that he's going to go back to the Senate and perform his constituency role. I think there's a certain pride among many Vermonters to see this guy on the national stage. So I think they're not going to ask for their money back.
Let's talk to Ann, who's calling from Laconia, New Hampshire. Hi, Ann. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I wanted to say I'm 75. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I was thinking of becoming an independent before Bernie entered the race. And he made me young again. I was so excited. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to vote for Hillary or not. But I agree with what Bernie's doing. I don't think he should drop out. I think it'd be a huge mistake. And I want to recommend one book which I just read called Listen Liberal by the man who wrote What's the Matter with Kansas. And it explained a lot to me about the Clintons, how they manage things. It's a very good book. The second, I heard interviewed on the Fresh Air either yesterday or the day before, a new book which is called, he couldn't say it on the air, Rat Bleeped. It's got a long title by someone named,
That's okay. Take your time.
I can't. Anyway, he explains how the Republicans spent very little money on winning enough seats so that when redistricting came up in 2010, they had all the power. And what your guest was just saying about getting young people involved. I mean, how much could he do in the Senate given the current state of affairs? I mean, he's in things for the long run. And getting young people to get out and vote. And the man just asked how his run is paid for. It's paid for all these people who are sending small amounts of money. It's not paid for by Wall Street. So I just have to vent. I think the world of Sam Sanders reporting, by the way, and I mostly listen to Vermont Public Radio. I don't even own a TV, so.
Well, Anne, we appreciate your phone call very much. Let's turn to Renee in East Montpelier. Hi, Renee. Renee, are you there? We will try to get back to Renee in just a moment. Let's talk to Jim in Plattsburgh. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you for allowing me. My question is, will Mr. Sanders reject the socialist and progressive agenda as it relates to all mention of the existence of God by eliminating the phrase under God from the Pledge of Allegiance, in God we trust from our money, and the phrase endowed by their creator from the Declaration of Independence? And my second question is, will both Hillary and Sanders reject the sale of body parts of aborted fetuses at Planned Parenthood or not?
Well, Jim, we don't have someone from the Sanders campaign with us today to answer those kinds of questions. And Matt Dickinson, I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
Well, Sanders can't do any of those things by himself. Obviously, it requires building coalition, and there's some people who have contrary positions on a lot of those issues. So it's probably not going to happen anytime soon. The other issue I would quickly touch on, the previous caller talking about support for Bernie, even at she was in her 70s, and she's not sure she could vote for Hillary. One of the problems that I think a lot of Sanders supporters have is that they don't trust her in the way they trust Bernie and his authenticity. And that's reflected in her approval ratings, or most notably her disapproval ratings, unfavorable ratings, which are at a historically high levels for a major party candidate. The only one who's viewed less favorably is her opponent, Donald Trump. So it's going to take some coaxing to get these people who have been backing Sanders and doing so because of his passion and his authenticity and switch over to a candidate who they inherently do not trust and do not think is honest.
And Matt, you mentioned earlier in the program that as many as 30% of Bernie Sanders supporters say, we cannot support Hillary Clinton. There's also a group in there that say, we're not supporting Hillary Clinton because we're voting for Donald Trump.
That's absolutely right.
Do you find that to be a surprise?
Well, these are the candidate supporters who are anti-establishment in general. They're rejecting any establishment candidate. And the one thing that Trump has is that he's not a politician. And there is enough overlap on some issues, like his opposition to trade, his opposition to intervention in foreign wars, that can allow a certain group of people to persuade themselves that if I can't vote for Sanders, Trump is the next best thing out there. I don't think the number is very high. I suspect it's below 10% of Sanders supporters who would actually pull the lever for Trump. But it may be enough in a close election to make the difference.
And you've been talking all program about the fine line that Sanders has to walk. In the next couple of weeks leading up to the convention, he wants certain issues in the party platform. He wants Hillary Clinton to come and address his supporters and talk about those progressive issues. How do you think this all is going to play out?
Well, I think this statement last night to his supporters set the tone for what the next 5 weeks or so are going to be until we get to Philadelphia. Not much is going to change here. Now, there'll be a lot of negotiating behind the scenes. There'll be a lot of intermediaries as they try to reach out and work out the details. But publicly, I think it's going to be pretty much the status quo. And then we come to the convention, and you have to allow Sanders the respect that he's earned in terms of giving him FaceTime, giving his supporters some say. You want them to be able to walk away from this by saying, my voice was heard. And then the crucial question is, how do you merge those coalitions in heading into November? And that's what is going to be really interesting.
It's going to be fascinating to see how all this turns out. Matt Dickinson, political science professor at Middlebury College, many, many thanks for being on the program today.
Always great to be with you, Bob.
And that is Vermont Edition for today. Coming up on Monday, we continue our series of interviews with gubernatorial candidates leading up to the primary election on August 9th. On the next Vermont Edition, we'll hear from former Windham County Senator Peter Galbraith, who is seeking the Democratic nomination. Send your questions for Peter Galbraith to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangari, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.